So there are two loose heads just floating around in here somewhere?
You can hear them at night. They whisper to each other and then cry.
Since our host isn't here, would anyone care to mix me a drink?
Horror films ask us many questions. Who will survive and what will be left of them? Who's going to believe a talking head? What's blood for if not for shedding? Do you like scary movies? Have you checked the children? Maybe we'll find the answers together. Thank you for joining us on Photo Flow, Terror in the Smiles. Here are your hosts, Eric Jones and Jake Almond.
Good evening. I'm your host.
Maybe 4 or 5 years ago, whenever I bought it on Blu-ray from Scream Factory, and I bought this and Night of the Demons at the same time. I remember because those were two movies that had VHS covers that I remember from my childhood on the video store aisle, and I never saw either one of those, and I watched them like fairly close together, and I really loved it. Like, it actually surprised me how good it was, and so that was my first memory. What was your introduction to Slumber Party Massacre?
I watched this for the first time, kind of like Sleepaway Camp, about 3 years ago or so. Actually, it was on your recommendation, so it might have been probably after whenever you had saw it. And what had got me was, like you said that, like, with the title, like the title for you, what you were thinking, I'm like, oh, this is like some, you know, Skinamax type thing. So, in all transparency, yes, that was kind of why I wanted to seek it out, kind of for that reason.
Oh yeah, I mean, now I'm like, okay, cool, that sounds fun, but I'm just saying, like, there was a time when I was like, oh no, I don't need to see that. Now I'm like, is there something else like this that's this cool, you know? I will say it delivers, but it also delivers in a way that I didn't expect. But
and what got me was actually kind of its history. It was originally, I guess the original script for it was written by a woman, Rita Brown, and she was trying to create a somewhat feminist parody of like the slasher, which is amazing. That shows you how prolific the slasher became, where only a couple of years after it kind of took off with Friday the 13th, there were enough imitators out there that someone was like, okay, we gotta parody this. It took God knows how many years from when James Bond first came out to when, you know, Austin Powers kind of finally did the big thing on like the old Bond formula. But I'm reading about this and then I'm reading how it was directed by a woman, Amy Jones. And I've seen this one, and I've seen Slumber Party Massacre 2. I never saw the third one, but all the I believe it's the only horror film series where every entry is directed by a woman. And as I was reading more about it, that how it sounded like it was trying to be, it wanted to be Scream, like a decade or so before Scream. And it was, it was backed by Roger Corman. And I've watched it with the commentary by Amy Jones twice, and she's always so funny when she talks about Roger Corman. She doesn't talk like negatively about it, but it's just funny how she'll say, the first thing Roger Corman is going to come to you and say, you got to have some nudity within the first 10 minutes of the movie. Yeah. And she's like, she's thinking he's joking. And she's like, no, you have to have, he's like, no, if people know I'm part of this movie in any capacity, you got to have like nudity within like the first 10 minutes. And she's like, oh, wow, really? It's going to sound crazy, but like one of the the best scenes in the movie is within the first 5 or so minutes. There's a shower scene in the girls' locker room at the school. The girls are a basketball team, and they're in the locker room showering. So it's a whole, you know, now, you know, we've seen shower scenes, in, you know, women showering in the movies, you know, all the time. You know, think about something like, you know, something, I guess, Porky's, or like,
I thought about Porky's for sure.
Yeah. so we have those types of scenes all the time. But there's something different about this one. And Amy Jones mentions in the commentary that she is like, okay, I guess I really got to do this because he's saying it. So she said that she was just going to do it just so straight up that, that, you know, someone's going to be like, whatever. So the camera literally just like, it hones in just tight on the women, and it just pans slowly while you're watching these women shower. Now she's just trying to get it done and over with. So she said she wasn't going to put any effort into it, but this is kind of where the parody satirical bits of it kind of come out. When you see that scene and you watch that scene, it's kind of amazing because for the first time you kind of sit there and you're kind of like, you're kind of sheepish, because yeah. it's like, oh, like, you know, you're kind of like, oh, wow.
It's almost making fun of you for watching it.
Yeah, it's like, you want to look at naked women? Here you go. And you're looking and just like, oh, and you kind of, it almost kind of makes you put your head down. And it's actually kind of a genius move. Now, she said that when she's done, so she's thinking like Roger Corman's going to be like, well, why would you do that? Like, he was fine with it. No, he was cool. It's like, I can believe that if Roger Corman doesn't care how you get the nudity in, you just got to get it in there.
Yeah. Well, what that's the thing though, going back to watching it that first time, that I realized that there was something going on here, deliberately throwing our expectations away or just manipulating our expectations so much. So and there's such a knowledge and a sure-footedness with the way she moves the camera and what she's commenting on, not just with the nudity but with other moments like suspense in the movie, that I'm like, gosh, this feels like it was made way later. Like, this was still 82 or 81 when they were filming it. The slasher genre was still there were so many movies to still be made, and I'm just shocked at how ahead of its time this movie is. It's doing the kind, like, exactly the kind of thing that Wes did with Scream. It may not be as polished as that due to budget reasons, but it's really clever and it's really well done. And and I feel like it now, plot wise, it's not doing a lot. It's just, you know, pretty much just the setup to get to the slashing stuff. But what it's doing with the subtext and what it's doing with the almost parodying Halloween in a couple places for sure. It's really dissecting a genre that was still in its, or a subgenre that was still in its infancy. And it's like she had some knowledge of where I know that they're not, slasher movies aren't that complicated. I get it. But I feel like Sleepaway Camp, it feels like a film commenting on something that was still in its infancy, and it knew where this is where the genre is going, and it's never really going to mature much beyond that. I don't 100% agree with that. I think that you do get, but where the genre kind of branches off is getting away from just being a simple, you know, teenage slasher movie, and it starts getting into like fantasy elements, like Nightmare on Elm Street, and or like, you know, Child's Play and stuff like that. I mean, that's where the slasher genre ultimately goes. But during this time, there are some really good examples, but there are also a lot of just boring or bad movies, and not all of them get bogged down trying to have a more complex plot than they need to. Sometimes the acting's so atrocious, or the characters are written in such a way that you just don't care, and it's hard to invest in the film, even if it's got it's got to have good gore effects, and it's got to have at least entertaining performances. I don't have to have Oscar-winning performances, but Slumber Party Massacre actually has competent camera work and interesting camera work. Like, there's a thought process behind it, like you were saying. And it has actually pretty decent performances. I'm liking the performances that in this movie. The boys are the most surface level to me, and that's kind of on purpose. That's another part of the context of the film.
I was just about to bring that up. How the boys and the girls in this movie, you just said the boys are very surface level, and if you notice, the boys are also kind of wimpy. They don't have the presence of Kevin Bacon in Friday the 13th or Skeet Ulrich or Jamie Kennedy or Matthew Lillard in Scream. Those are male characters in those films that, have a sort of I know at the time in Friday the 13th, Kevin Bacon wasn't really, he wasn't really Kevin Bacon yet, but he's still a character that kind of has a bit of presence. There's still that somewhat maleness that's kind of there. In Slumber Party Massacre, these dudes they're all just sort of very they're very passive, and they're not very strong. Not to say that they present a weak version of masculinity or anything like that. It's just that they aren't as strong, and because they're not the focus, so that's another thing. But they're not written to be as strong as the women are. Something else that was pointed out in the commentary, that in this movie you see, even though this woman is one of the first character that you see killed in the film, the woman that's like a electrician or whatever she is, I think she's, and she gets killed in the van or whatever.
Or she's in the telephone. She works for a telephone company or something.
But you see women in this film who are who work with they're working with power tools. You see women who are coach, any other movie you probably would have had a man coaching those women playing basketball, but they had a woman playing it. I think there was another scene where there's a woman that's like a carpenter. So it's interesting that you see women in these spots in films that would typically have male characters. And so that's one aspect of it where you see it, where it deviates from the tradition. Another instance is with the kills themselves. If you notice, the only kills that are on screen are the male characters. The ones that you see killed on screen. The women are killed off screen. But then also with the women, it's that when the killer is finally at the house, the boys are kind of, they're kind of uneasy. They're kind of panicking. The women are the ones who all grab the knives, and they saddle up. And they're just ready to deal with this. Not all of them survive, but they all just get ready and get ready to roll the minute the dude the drill man comes to the house. And and the killer himself, this is another instance of where you could see that other idea thinking. His method of killing is a power drill, and so he drills into people. And there's a lot, there's a couple of moments where there will be a shot where you're looking between his legs, and you'll see the tip of the drill in the middle going in between his legs, obvious as an obvious phallic symbol, and that this dude is essentially, I guess, impotent without his drill. It might not even, be as deep as that, but and even with the commentary on the Scream Factory Blu-ray, Amy Jones she'll say that, well, I wasn't really trying to, I wasn't trying to go that deep, or I wasn't trying to go this deep. And I think she kind of is selling herself short, because, like I said, with her directorial skill, the way some of these things are, that it wasn't just happenstance. It wasn't just coincidence. A lot of these moves were very, and they didn't even use, they didn't really even use the script, the majority of the script from the original writer, Rita Brown. They didn't really use her full script like that. A funny bit was they had to, when they were looking for houses to do shooting in, they had to change the title of the movie from Slumber Party Massacre to Sleepless Nights, so that it looked more high class thriller. so that people, because people weren't gonna let them film in their house if they just knew it was some low budget slasher.
Not me. Anybody wants to film a low budget slasher at my house? No, Well, yeah. Come on. I'll go ahead and throw out the open invite. You know what's the worst that could happen? I have actually ruined a bathroom before filming a really bloody scene at a house that I lived at when I lived at Carolina Beach, and Heather was so mad at me, but it really did look like we tried to cover up a crime scene. I'm pretty sure that wall, and it had probably had to be painted a couple times after we moved out. But the type of blood that my makeup guy used wasn't made for white walls, let's just put it that way. There was no way to get the stains out without repainting. Yeah, no, you're 100% on that. And one of the things that I like the most about Slumber Party Massacre is those aspects. The fact that it doesn't seem like a movie called Slumber Party Massacre would be as clever as it is. And it is. It's really clever. It's not just clever, it's thoughtful. And there is a thought process going behind why she did, you know, film things, put the camera in certain places, and I think that all I need in a slasher film is just a little bit of suspense. And I think that one of the things that she accomplishes in a few of the chase scenes is suspense. And I think at the end, when he covers himself with the blanket so that he could be discovered and attack again, that's a creepy moment. And I think that the whole ending is handled so, like, okay, so there's a scene that right before everything goes crazy where you can see she's like setting you up for the final act, and it's done almost identically to, you know how there in Halloween there's a lot of moments of Jamie Lee just kind of walking from one house to another, walking from one place to another, and it's real eerie and it's all built up. There's not as much of that kind of building up in this film, but one of the things I appreciated about it is when you kind of have that same thing going on in this that you did with the original Halloween, where all the craziness is happening over at one house, and your main girl, your final girl, is at a different house altogether, and she's basically the babysitter, even though that's her younger sister, that's played by an actress who is obviously not as young as she's playing. But she's basically babysitting, and she's the responsible teenager, whereas all the fun teenagers are across the street. It's very much set up like Halloween. And there's a moment where she goes out of the house and she goes down the sidewalk to some overturned trash cans, and the music and the way the scene is shot, it's Amy paying tribute to Halloween. And I thought that was really cool. And the script being written by Rita Mae Brown as a parody, but being filmed as a straight horror film, pretty much for the most part, by Amy Jones, makes it. I mean, you say that they didn't use as much of the original script. That's interesting. But regardless, like, there's enough of the DNA of the idea of a parody in there. But then flipping that and saying let's film it straight was brilliant, because sometimes the funniest, or I don't know, the way that something like that works is that you treat it like it. I think Scream does something similar. I think Scream is written by Kevin Williamson with his tongue in his cheek, and even calling it Scary Movie makes it no relation to the Scary Movie that came out after, other than that was a parody of Scream. But that always struck me as weird that somebody even parodied Scream in the first place, because it seems like when you do something like that that's so aware of itself, it's almost beyond parody. And I think that Slumber Party Massacre, maybe the characters in Slumber Party Massacre aren't as self-aware as the characters in Scream. They're not aware of the genre conventions, but the director is, and so are the viewers. And I think that it makes it really interesting. And I think where she ends up giving the commentary on the genre, where she ends up is, it's a legitimate slasher film. It's got all the elements that you need in a slasher film, especially from the early 80s. But it leaves that thread bare, so that later on, when Kevin Williamson writes Scream 14 years later and Wes Craven directs it, Kevin Williamson's, like, and we'll talk about this more with Scream, but his entire thing, he's kind of the Rita Mae Brown of that situation, because Wes takes it and makes it much more dark in tone than I think Kevin even intended, because the scene in the kitchen when the Billy and Sue are slashing each other up, he came to Wes and said, "This is a little dark, Wes." And he said, and Wes looked at him and said, "You're the writer. You're the one who wrote it." I mean, that's how much different a story can be written by someone, and they think this is funny. This is going to make people laugh. A director can then take that scene and find the darkness in it and be like, "No, this is going to make people scared and upset." And so there's, and I think some of that is what's going on with Slumber Party Massacre, and why it surprised me so much, and why I latched onto it. I think you were the same way with it, just from listening to you talk about it. And it's having so much fun doing what it's doing, and I feel like the actors are having so much fun that we get these really good performances. And the only moment, I mean, there's funny parts because of the situation, but the only moment in it that borderlines to me, and maybe I'm forgetting something, I'm not saying that there's no funny moments, but the only part that's like really steering close to like parody is the moment with the pizza, where she's like, the body's cold, and the one girl's like, "Well, is the pizza?" And yeah. like that's the only part to me that's like outright almost too far, but it's still funny. Like, I still laugh. It's not too far, but you know what I'm saying. Like, yeah. Everything else in it, I feel like, plays it straight enough that, yeah, it's a little weird, but it totally works. Like, there's nothing in it that pulls you out of the movie necessarily, especially now. I think some of the stuff you were talking about with, like, the women using power tools and stuff, yeah, that's funny. It is funny because you wouldn't see women in those roles typically, and they just didn't cast women in roles like that in movies. But nowadays you'd see that, and I don't think, like, somebody would necessarily watch that and be, that would necessarily stand out to them.
Or just the idea that it's a... You know, it's a women's basketball, you know, the women basketball team, you know, in a slasher, you have the jocks, the football players, usually they're football players, but here your main cast is a team of women basketball players.
Yeah, you're right. You normally wouldn't see that. You don't have any of those. Like you said, the two main guys in the movie, neither one of them are your typical jock or anything like that, so that's interesting. But it manages to never really go into goofball territory, which is what I thought it was going to be when I first picked this movie up.
I think even with the killer, because like the killer himself, he doesn't really say anything. I can't remember. Was there a moment where they say in the radio that he's like some escaped
something. Apparently he killed some people years before that, so it's kind of the Michael Myers thing where he killed some people, he was institutionalized, and he got out. He steals a telephone you know, telephone company worker's van the way Michael steals Loomis's car in Halloween, or the sanitarium's car or whatever. So yeah, it was Loomis's car. So I mean, there are some Halloween connections there, but there is a Loomis in this movie. What they managed to do is Valerie, the main character, even in some ways than Laurie Strode, because when she does go at the end, when she does find out what's going on, she kicks some ass, man. She gets that machete and she's going after him, and she never really lets up. Like, she makes the mistake of dropping the machete, but like, she slit his freaking guts open. Like, you would think that he'd be down for the count, so I forgive her for that. And he's not a Michael Myers. Like, they're really interesting that they do with the Russ Thorn character too, because he doesn't speak much and he doesn't have much characterization other than that, like you said, that little bit of exposition on the radio. The part where he does speak, when that girl's on the floor and he's about to kill her and she's like, why, I don't even know you. And he's like, he says something like, I love you, or I love, like, there is some inter, like, I don't really know what they're trying to say with that other than he's out of his mind, but it is interesting. And there are a lot of men who do abuse people, not just women, but women especially, and do it claiming that they love somebody. Like, that's, you know, definitely there. Women or people in real life that have been violent towards women, serial killers or whatever, they are obsessed with them. And they typically, like, Ted Bundy was obviously obsessed with women. I mean, he only ever killed women that I know of. So to me, like, this was Ted Bundy. Yeah, Ted Bundy was already known at this point when this movie came out. There's a very Ted Bundy-ness to Russ Thorn, other than, you know, the little bit of time where Bundy was able to kind of walk the earth as a normal person to some people. But I mean, like, the unhinged Ted Bundy, like the real Ted Bundy, like, there's a little bit of that in this Russ Thorn character. You know, there's other moments in the movie that I think are, the self-awareness comes through. There's a moment where one of the characters is watching a slasher movie in the movie. Like, it was, I don't know if that was even a real movie, but she's
It was. I can't remember the name of it. They do mention it in the commentary.
Okay.
They said it was a Roger Corman movie.
Okay. And in the movie, there's a killer in Hollywood, and it's like Hollywood slasher. I'm like, Scream 3, man. They're like, yep. You know, that's what Scream. You know, they're watching this slasher movie while somebody's outside being murdered. I was like, well, that's straight up in line with Scream. The final act, the whole final act craziness of them fighting Russ, it to me is one of a great final act. Scream is the standard bearer for me for a great final act in a slasher film. But granted, Scream 1 came out after the slasher genre was dead. Like, the classics era of slasher genres. I'm not saying they don't still make slasher films, but most of slasher films are looking back. Most slasher films nowadays, whether they be, and I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but whether it be like something like X, which is obviously looking back to the 70s, or I don't know, there's probably other examples. A lot of them are looking back, and in a way, Scream did that first, because it was like, it came out at a time when nobody was really caring about slasher movie anymore, and all the big slasher icons like Chucky, Freddy, Jason, Michael, they were all done by 1989, 1990. And so Scream was kind of looking back on the genre. And Slumber Party Massacre in that way is kind of looking back, but also not. It's kind of looking at the moment in time as it's happening and looking forward. And I think that it, without going into too much, like going on and on and saying the same thing over and over, it belongs in the conversation with the greats. That's all I'm saying. It's not, it doesn't belong in the, oh yeah, Slumber Party Massacre is a fun B movie. No, it belongs in the category with the greats. Now, it doesn't have the icon killer. I think Russ Thorne's fine. Like, he's interesting in the film as a character. but it's the what this film accomplishes. And so I don't think that the sequels hold a candle to this first movie. I do like, by the way, I did like the sci-fi remake or whatever you want to call it, reimagining of Slumber Party Massacre. I actually think that was really fun. I like the third one really well. The second one is banana balls.
Yes,
but I like it. Like, but it's not. None of them are as impactful as this one to me. Impactful to me personally. I think it belongs in the conversation though with the greats.
Yeah, I agree. Just to add the movie that was playing. It's called Hollywood Boulevard. It was the directorial debut of Joe Dante.
Oh, okay. Wow, really? That's awesome. Yeah. So that's so cool. Okay, yeah. I'll have to check that out. I love Joe Dante movies too. And Joe Dante later on, he's famous for Gremlins, but my favorite Joe Dante film is The Burbs. And The Burbs also is a comedy that comments on horror films specifically, not specifically slashers, but just horror in general. So we'll definitely cover The Burbs at some point. But yeah, that's cool, man. I didn't know that was a Joe Dante movie, but I just thought that really never stood out to me as being weird because I'm so used to seeing people watching horror films in horror films. But in 1982, that was still kind of rare, I guess. I mean, I know in Nightmare on Elm Street, she's watching Evil Dead at one point, but that was more like specifically not trying to. I don't think Wes was intentionally making a comment on horror films with that. He was literally doing this weird thing that he and Sam Raimi were doing at the time, where every time Sam Raimi made a movie, he would reference Wes Craven, and Wes Craven would make a movie, he would reference Sam Raimi. And so, I don't know. It was just something you didn't see much. And I thought that was kind of a Scream-like moment too, doing it before Scream. This movie ends in such a satisfying way to me. We were talking about the final act, but the way the movie cuts to credits over the sounds of the crying and the sirens and the sounds of the Casio keyboard. It's so good, man. It's like, this is how a slasher movie like this should end. There's no, it's not really happy, but it's also, it is triumphant. But like, these characters are actually reacting the way you would expect somebody would react in that situation. And I thought that was kind of fresh because so many slasher movies try to make the character out to be like an action hero or show no signs of trauma whatsoever after. This movie doesn't even need a sequel, like, that these people are all needing therapy at the end of this, but it was great, man. I love the ending.
Yeah, it doesn't take up, and again, this is another film, well filmed and well edited. It's an hour 16 minutes, and it's so lean, and therefore they're able to put so much into it, other than, you have the opening with the, you're introducing to the characters in the school and all that. And then, pretty much it moves to the house for the rest of the, for the rest of the movie. It's kind of like when I think about it, whenever I watch Halloween, I always kind of am amazed that there's not too much going on outside of the house. There's a good amount portion of that, of Carpenter's Halloween, that is at the house, and this one kind of does the same. I did also want to shout out an early scene that I love. You were talking about the suspense earlier. I love the scene where the killer is chasing the one girl in the school, and she's trying to hide out amongst the in the shower room and all that. Mm-hmm. I just think that's a well placed suspense. You definitely feel that for me, a suspenseful scene definitely works when it's like you feel that dread, and you just feel that dread for that young lady in that scene.
Yeah, and the blood looks good. Like, the show named after a chemical used in stage blood, at least until the people realized it would blind you, like in Friday the 13th, when it happened to an actor. So Photoflow, that's where we get our name from. So we got to talk about the blood. The blood in Slumber Party Massacre looks really good. Like, it looks...
Yeah.
I'm I used to, like, when I was doing stage and film and stuff, I would like to make the blood. So, like, I'm always impressed when somebody actually gets it right. Slumber Party Massacre gets the blood right, man. I was like, really in love with that. So, I mean, there's a bunch of parodies out there. There's actually, like, before Scary Movie's the most famous. But even as early as, like, Student Bodies and movies like that, they were already making parodies in the 80s of this genre. There's a bunch of parodies. There's other movies that are kind of borderline self-aware. I don't think anyone quite got to the point that Scream got. But I think there are other movies that are precursors to Scream, even Friday the 13th Part 6, and has elements of self-awareness to it. Even a couple of characters in the movie that even specifically reference horror films. But there aren't that many that work on the level that Slumber Party Massacre works, especially not this early on. And I feel like I've already said, just to kind of wrap things up, it's too well produced, directed, edited, performed to be left out of the conversation with the other greats of the decade. To me, it's a movie that, like, it deserves a better reputation than I feel like it has. So I would I know among horror fans, it's probably well-loved, I have no doubt. But among people who are just, like, there are people who aren't hardcore horror fans that don't watch this stuff all the time like a lot of us do, that will still cite Halloween and The Exorcist and stuff like that, they should give Slumber Party Massacre a chance. If you're out there and you've never seen it, you should give it a chance. It's really good.
Totally agree. It was one of my, I love when I'm surprised by something, and this is one of my favorite surprises. Like you said, it does too much to kind of be left out of the conversation.
Podcast Ask Us Many Questions. Who will listen and who will return next week? Who will take the time to rate and review? Check for a new episode of Photo Flow every week. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at Photo Flow Terror and Instagram on Photo Flow _Terror. Thank you for listening to Photo Flow. We'll find the terror in the smiles.